All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome into Bitcoiner's Guide. Today, we got a cool cast and crew of people. Obviously, Plan Marcus and me are here. And we got the wonderful plebs up in the building, Mel, Bitcoin Chinchilla, and Yellow. Looks like he's not here, but oh, there he is.
Hi.
What's up? What's up, guys?
What's up, everybody?
Thanks for having me, guys.
We're not really having you. We're just having a conversation, talking about Bitcoin. So before we press record, Bitcoin Chinchilla was talking about Mr. Hex and these Louis Vuitton or Gucci outfits. Are you looking to buy?
Hey.
Boy, looking thick.
Hey, Hex.
Hey, he's pulling the Carlos Matos
vibes.
Yes.
Oh. You know, I've been seeing him in this outfit for months, right? But it just occurred to me today that it's so hideous that is that really Louis Vuitton? Like, it's so obnoxious, we kind of assume it is, but it might not be.
He's like one step ahead of the game. He's like got multicolor. He's ready for pride already. Every single arm and limb is like a different color on him.
he's just repping for the month. He's repping for June.
That's crazy, Tom.
Yeah.
Seems to me the price is down and he's screaming for attention, any attention. There's no such thing as bad press, right? When you're running a Ponzi.
He's the Sam King.
No, not at all.
Can you even buy Hex on an exchange? I thought it was part of that DeFi swapping stuff.
No, I don't think so. Only Uniswap and like Uniswap related copycats, like on.
Basically, yeah, you send one Bitcoin and you get 0.01 Bitcoin back.
Yeah.
I think you can buy it off Richard in the stores. If you approach him at the mall or his shop and he'll sell it to you.
So that takes a little more skill than just like buy and sell. It really does. How many people have fallen for this?
And the ledger leak that went out that let everyone's kind of information out there. I know a ton of people get junk mail from Hex. Like, he definitely drank up that list and, you know, sends it out to everyone who was on there. There's like always Hex shit in the mail to those people.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm on that list as well. I got paper mail here in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I get it too. I was just wasn't going to say that I was on there.
Surfer Jim.
Surfer Jim, what's up?
What's up, guys? I wasn't in front of my laptop with my camera when you guys were posting stuff, so it took me a few minutes to get it together. Were you guys just talking about Richard Hart, scammer?
Yeah.
I knew it didn't take much for me to figure it out. That guy's I can't believe anybody listens to him. He pulled a good one though. Didn't he convince everybody to buy Hex and stake it for like years on end so they can't cash out or something? Like
that's what I was just saying. I don't think you can buy it on an exchange. I think you actually have to go through that DeFi stuff, which actually takes a little bit of skill, right?
Yeah, no, I'm not sure.
It doesn't take him very much skill. You can easily buy it, but the problem with the Hex is that the majority of those guys lock them up in so-called contracts to get like crazy interest that they would never get in the end. And they lock them for like 10 years. Like 10 years, you can't move it. You can't do anything. You can't sell it. You can't touch it. So the guy is basically farming liquidity for his exit plan. He can see everything on chain. And like, I think like in 8 years or 9 years, he's going to do the great exit and become a billionaire with their money. So
Don't you think he's already cashed out a whole bunch of their money somehow?
I think he got ETH for
the Hex, and then he's already turned that into Bitcoin because he probably realized.
I think he's smart enough that he can like pull that scam one more cycle. Yeah. So yeah, he cast probably out for his watches and his like track suits.
I can't believe he's not embarrassed to wear that stuff, honestly. Okay, even if he wasn't a scammer, he looks like a teenager. I
still have to back up. I
definitely involved
me today that I know enough about fashion that that is the most hideous outfit. Like, that is so not an actual, like, is that really a Louis Vuitton outfit? That's what I'm going to find out next.
Well, if you,
I mean, I know he says it is, but man, I thought they had more class than that.
I would just say if he was in shape, maybe he might be able to pop that out.
Maybe.
If he was in shape and famous for doing something, you know, respectful, maybe. Because some other famous people could pull it off and not get mocked as much as the Bitcoin community.
So wait, son, are you saying that after all that you have seen from the guy, you're basically fat shaming the guy now?
Yes.
How dare you, sir?
No, it's terrible.
I'm jealous.
I think the suit did his job, right? We're talking about him, so mission accomplished.
Yeah, is that the whole goal? Is that the whole goal of all the altcoin space? Just be like so out there that we'll talk about, like, Bitcoiners will talk about you, no matter what it is.
Not
Isn't
sure
there
that's
saying right. All news is good news, even when it's bad news or something. You know?
Yeah, that's my theory right now.
Yeah.
My guess is your audience isn't falling for that. You know, I feel like you could have this honest conversation with this audience.
Yeah.
They're not going to fall for any kind of shitconnery, is my point.
Not this audience. His audience, they're brainwashed.
Oh, totally. Oh, my God.
I don't know how people, well, whatever. People are lazy and they believe the first narrative they hear and, you know, whatever. They don't do their homework. It's hilarious.
It doesn't take, listen, I did my homework. It doesn't take that much really into it. Yeah, it just blows my mind that people don't do a little more.
Yeah, well, that's it. You have to do a minimum amount to really grasp enough key ingredients for Bitcoin to, you know, for the light bulb in your head to really go off and for it to, like, you get that tingle down your spine, like, whoa, that's what this actually is? No way. Yes. Like, it's this epiphany moment, but you have to do a minimum amount of homework. Obviously, it's different for everybody, but there's definitely, it's more than just, you know, 5 minutes from some dude on the internet or whatever. You need a little time into this, depending on who you are. And, you know, once you get there, though, it becomes super clear. And then it becomes super clear why X is never going to be this thing, you know, that matters or whatever. And it's just a rug pull eventually. Richard's a smart guy. He knows enough about enough little things to craft it in such a way that, you know, he's been getting away with it. And people are still hanging with the guy for some weird reason. Who knows? Yeah, you know, we all know Bitcoin is the only thing that matters.
For the newbies, we have to acknowledge that Richard Hart before Hex and before he started shitcoining, he was one of the most, like, best debater ever for the Bitcoin thesis, and he's he got, like, very well known through the debates he did with shitcoiners and stuff, and he destroyed Roger Ver in that one video, if I remember correctly.
He's a good debater because he knows how to use debate skills, but his arguments lack substance, but the people he's debating with don't know how to counter well enough. Plus, he talks really fast. He'll say things with 15 points in it. So now you got to, like, okay, what the hell what do I got to counter here? So his style is such that he overwhelms people. I mean, what he did to Svetsky was sort of sad because Alex doesn't debate like that. Alex wants to talk about facts and go in a nice logical order, and Rich doesn't work that way. And when you're not ready for that, if you don't know, like, if you can't call him out on, he'll cite statistics that you would not even have a clue about because you don't study his ecosystem. And so now you can't debate that. So he'll say things as if it's fact. So you have to be super prepared against that guy. You have to know all his bullshit.
The different Jim, I think, is, like, he used to be better because he was debating a truth.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And it was way more easy for him to debate that truth.
Right, but now he figured out.
Now he has to weasel, wazzle, dazzle around whatever he's trying to sell, right?
Yes. Right, right. No, but he figured out how to debate well. But, you know, look, for those of us who have heard or known about this guy for a while, he was a big internet scammer back, you know, 10, 20 years ago. He was
spunking.
Wasn't he even like prosecuted for some spam king? Right. That's what it was. Yeah. Like no morals at all.
Professional spammer. Yeah.
Right. No morals at all. I'm going to spam the shit out of people so I can get rich. I don't give a crap what happens to them. That is disgusting. Yeah. That's what he's doing again with Hex. You don't give a crap about the people who bought his Hex.
Yeah, he's definitely a master debater.
Master baiter. Yeah, that too, probably.
The master baiter
of his Red Bull can sized PP.
What the fuck, man?
Is that the European-sized can or the?
I mean, that makes him like more guilty in his whole scamming, though, because you know he knows the fundamentals. Like,
that's the worst part, right there. Yeah. He definitely knows. He knows he's scamming people, and he's lying about how he's not every day.
What do you think he's doing with all those gains? He's buying Bitcoin.
Absolutely. Hell yeah, he has a lot of Bitcoin.
Well, he's buying flashy things and Bitcoin.
Right. Well, I think the guy has made tons of money over the years because of all the different types of scams he's been involved in. So he already had a lot of wealth. So yeah, the flashiness is to show all his followers how they can be like him. So he's dropped plenty of money on those flashy items. And, you know, whatever. This is his game plan. It's like, you know, look at how cool and rich I am. You could be like me. Follow me. You know, whatever. Pied Piper of
It's weird because like when people start to pull out all the stops like he's pulling out right now, it makes me feel like either he's like something's going on that he needs to create all of this hype, or it's almost like the Federal Reserve, right? Like when things start going bad, they got to start pulling out all the stops to make sure that
that's interesting. I was thinking something similar recently, like, why doesn't he just shut up and like go away for a little while? You know, like, yeah, like maybe he's got issues that he needs to stay in front of people's attention. You know, stuff that we can't see. It's weird. He's weird. Like, you know, you would think the guy would just, with the Hex price going down as far as it's gone, like I don't follow it, but I've seen some charts. It's pretty much crashed. You'd think the guy would just want to shut up and go away and be left alone, but no, that ego, he can't get enough of something.
Got some heavy bags he's got to ditch.
Yeah, maybe.
I think he's got a wide open floor right now. Everyone is quiet, you know. Everyone's quiet right now because the cap is really low. I mean, the money that's in the system right now is incredibly low. So it's actually kind of an opportunity for him if you think about it. He has the balls to do it, so he's got a wide open audience.
Fortune.
Same with Roger Ver. He also he hasn't been like on Twitter for over a year, and he just showed back up like a couple of months ago.
Isn't he?
They gotta set.
Go to an island and what was he doing? He's like trying to just scam some new people with what is it, BCH?
Oh, down in the Caribbean somewhere, he was trying to convince some government to adopt it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about.
Yeah.
I heard something.
Yeah.
It's B-Cash on
St.
Martin.
Yeah,
this is a perfect time for that.
He actually got the local Robbie's Lottery, which is like a lottery. You know, they got like these wooden stalls all over the island where like local people can spend like their last $5 to buy some hopium at a lottery stand.
Yeah,
they got They got all those lottery stands accepting Bitcoin Cash there on the island now. And the funny thing is the guy, Robbie, he was actually arrested in Curaçao for suspicion of murdering some kind of politician on Curaçao. So this is the kind of people they're letting themselves in with. Yeah, it's very suspect.
Roger Ver is he's a convicted felon who served jail time. And Richard Hart, he's the spam king. So these people they don't care if they do illegal activities. They don't really care.
In Roger's defense, wasn't that for fireworks?
It was.
In my opinion, probably shouldn't even be a crime. I mean, you know, what people get accused of doing, breaking laws, sometimes are perfectly justifiable. In my opinion, some laws are absurd. So I'm not so sure that's necessarily should be considered a bad thing. I don't know all the facts, but he wasn't like extorting and child porn trafficking or something, you know, really, really egregious like that.
I don't know. Illegal fireworks or something like that. But either way, I mean,
that's a fair point. But he's now
willing to push the line, right? He's willing to do things that could land him in jail.
Well, I'm willing to push the line too, because a lot of the rules that say I'm supposed to follow are bullshit. So, you know, everybody breaks. Look, everybody is a federal criminal every day. We all break some stupid law we don't even know about, right? So that's a tough
financial
one.
Financial crime might sometimes be worth doing the time, because the money is so big. So think about if you're somebody like Hex, dude, that, you know, he can go do a couple of years in the federal, you know, a couple of years in federal prison is not going to hurt him. You know, he could just continue on. He can come out and start another one.
Well,
that's not that big of a thing, right?
Banks launder billions and billions of dollars of money every year, and then they get slapped with like $100 million fine at the end of the year, and then they keep laundering more.
The cost to pay the fine is nothing. But the difference is you're talking about a corporation and nobody personally pays a price. When a person does it and then they physically spend time in a jail cell, that's a little different. And it's certainly completely unfair how this big corporation over here gets away with it by paying a fine, and the individual doesn't get the opportunity a lot of times, because they, you know how they are. They want to make an example of individual people, so individual people won't do certain things. You know, it's how they play the game. You know, if you get caught, even if the rule is bullshit, and even if a corporation would get out of it, the individual gets railroaded a lot of times. It's, you know, it depends. Depends on what it is and who you are.
Yeah,
there's a lot of bad rules on the books.
They don't want the people getting in on that lucrative business that the corporations already have.
Oh yeah, of course. You know, now the corporate veil needs to be pierced way more often. Like right now, all the drug companies, that there's felon criminal murderers running all of them. They all should be hung from the neck until they don't move anymore. They're literally murderers. They're colluding with governments who have the power of violence behind them to really, really coerce, like, but in some cases mandate that you take an experimental chemical that is proving to kill like a lot of people, you know, and they want people to believe like it's still safe, and they want little kids to get it. I mean, the more conspiracy theories, like, I don't mean to hijack your conversation here, but the more conspiracy theories I hear about, read about, where there are global elites that think there's too many people, you know, the eugenics bullshit Gates has been involved in for years, even his going back to his father's time, you know, like, oh, the world's too populated, we need to reduce populations. The amount of shit him and Fauci have been doing with AIDS research and killing people in Africa for decades. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that there's a whole big group of people that want to kill half the world and get away with it and not get caught. And these pharmaceutical companies start out in advance with governments writing magic words on paper that remove all liability for anything they might do. So now, like, sky's the limit, kill as many people as you want. No one's going to get in trouble here. I'll pay a few bucks, but we've made billions, so that'll be easy, like we just discussed. I mean, it just blows my mind what's going on. And the sheeple are following right off the cliff. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to be careful, right, with what I think is good is that if you wanted to take a pill or a vaccine or whatever, you had the chance to do that. What I don't agree with is the mandate, right?
Yeah, of course.
If there's a sickness out there and your government makes a vaccine or a pill and you want to take it, I think you should have the freedom to be allowed to take it. But you shouldn't have the power to mandate everyone to take a specific thing, because everyone's body reacts differently to certain drugs and to certain foods. Like, you can't mandate everyone to be vegan or everyone to be carnivore. People have to do what works best for them. You can't mandate everyone to choose Bitcoin, right? People want to choose a fiat lifestyle. They can choose fiat and take that punishment. But if they want to understand what Bitcoin is, then they can choose Bitcoin and live a better life.
The problem with the
point?
Go ahead.
Well, it was just the point that we're supposed to have that choice. You know, I'm okay. If you decide you don't want the vaccine, I'm okay with that.
Yes.
If I choose to get the vaccine, you have to be okay with that, because that's what makes us, you know, important, that we have that freedom and that choice to be able to pick and choose.
I agree with all that. The problem that we have is the way society is structured right now, and the powers that control narratives and incentives are completely misaligned for the regular folks learning the truth and being able to make informed decisions. When the government incentivizes all kinds of industries at all levels to promote the jab, celebrities making music videos, dancing about getting your jab, right? Krispy Kreme donuts and free hamburgers, lottery tickets being given away. Like, come and get this, hurry up, it's really important. Like, the incentives totally skew, and you know, like, unfortunately, there's too many stupid people out there, but it skews the narrative in such a way that it makes it look happy. Let's all join the party, get a donut, you know, like, come on. Like, it's insane. Well, wait, let me take it one step further. When the government incentivizes hospitals to write down on the paperwork certain specific facts that allow them to get a shit ton more money, whether or not they're true, like the amount of people that are sick with COVID or this, that, or the other, like, the incentives are absurd. Get them on a ventilator, they get more money. Like, the incentives are so broken in so many layers that it causes people to act in ways they wouldn't act if they knew the truth.
Like, what about all the forced messages they put all over social media, you know, on Twitter, on Spotify, anybody talking about COVID, you know, there's like an entire banner that these companies have to place there that's like, it's fact checked, or are the facts, go here for real information, because the information that you're getting is probably misleading, etc. You know, it's like this whole truth police thing is pretty scary.
I love the transition from the Hex Richard Hart twerking to the jab, because those two are related. He's probably jabbed. Anyway.
Yeah, well.
So, Jim, speaking of political things, tell these guys what we're doing at the end of the month.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you guys know about Pork Fest, right? Porcupine Freedom Festival in New Hampshire. Who knows about that, or who doesn't?
Of course. I don't know about it.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, all right. You guys would love it. Being Bitcoiners, I think you would love it. So my first year was last year. I kept hearing about it, and I figured, I should go check it out. So it's this place called Rogers Campsite, Northern New Hampshire. It's like 10,000 acres. It's huge. Thousands of campsites. And the whole place is taken over by this festival for a week. Essentially, the whole campsite's rented out now, and you can't even get a ticket anymore. And there's several thousand people show up. And for a week, it's a big festival of sorts. So everybody is staying at a campsite on this giant piece of property. And so a lot of these campsites are turned into vendor sites. Like, these people go there to sell stuff. Right. So there's one lady's doing yoga every morning. You go to her site and there's yoga mats and everybody's doing yoga, and somebody else is selling crystals and somebody else is selling T-shirts, and there's food vendors and of all kinds, but very, very, very libertarian. So the ideology of the people there is very much aligned with Bitcoiners. Like, leave me alone. Let me exchange some value for freely between us. I don't need a bunch of rules, you know, like. It's an open carry state. So there's a lot of people carrying firearms when you're there, which at first is a little weird when you're not used to it, but it's super safe. Kids running around, even into the night, just running around like safe, like it feels super safe. And then there are talks and performances, a comedy special at one point. Dave Smith is usually always there. Tom Woods is always there. And so there's a lot of great talks you can sit on, either at a little campsite with 20 or 30 people, or inside this giant pavilion with like hundreds of people watching, let's say, a debate. John Vallis was there last year debating somebody on something. I forget what it was, but it's cool. And so the thing is, Patrick, our friend Patrick, Bitcoin Motorist, he a couple of years ago decided we need to promote Bitcoin at this festival. Nobody's really talking about Bitcoin. Now, yeah. Bitcoin's been at Porkfest since way back in 2014, at least. Mandrick used to sell, he sold a tray of baklava for 14 Bitcoin back in 2014. Oh my God. So So Bitcoin and Porkfest and libertarians. Yeah, Sean's like shaking that. Yeah, 14 Bitcoins for a tray of baklava. And he brings it. He makes the stuff now, brings it to events and gives it to all of us. I've had his baklava like 10 different events now. The guy's awesome.
Thing, Jimmy, the best thing is that Roger Ver bought it.
Yeah,
That's the best part.
So you know, getting back to this festival, it's a great, great libertarian freedom festival that is just a great experience. And Patrick set up the Bitcoin hub. We have essentially the campsite that is the Bitcoin place to go if you want to learn about Bitcoin or hang out with Bitcoiners. And so we set up tables and chairs and give talks. We have a, you know, an audio system. And last year we had a couple sponsors. Hey, we're looking for sponsors this year if anybody's hearing this and wants to help sponsor us. But we talk Bitcoin for days. You know, we have poker games, we cook steaks, and we made a lot of good friends last year, a lot of cool people that finally grasped what Bitcoin is because they sat down and talked to us for an hour or so. And so it's really, really cool event. I encourage anybody to go to it that can go. And you know, we'll be up there representing Bitcoin, trying to help people. So that's the plan. Mel's coming this year. We got a handful of people that true Bitcoiners are going to be there supporting us. I know a few people that from Twitter that say they're going to go. So looking forward to meeting some people I've never met before. I just know their Twitter handle. So that should be cool. So
what's the link, Surfer Jim? Where do people
just
need to
Porkfest,
go?
PORCFEST.com. Porkfest.com should get you there. It starts on the 20th. Stands for
Porcupine Fest.
Okay. Yeah, Porcupine Freedom Festival is the exact name. I don't know why the porcupine is involved. The event is put on by an organization called the Free State Project in New Hampshire. Their goal is to live free or die, like the state motto says. They want to be left alone. They are trying to craft legislation that, you know, gives them the maximum amount of freedom that they can have individually in that state. I'm pretty sure Bruce Fenton is running for senator in that state right now. So, you know, it is a pretty free libertarian minded state, you know, with some cool people, and Patrick lives there. He loves it. And so Porkfest is one of these, you know, really cool events. That's all. I don't know what else to say. I'm looking forward to it.
Going to events like this, yeah, those are always fun. Cause I mean, even in Miami, I mean, us three, Surfer Jim, Mel and me, right? We went out to dinner one night and that was a lot of fun. We were with Greg and Chair Force and Patrick was there.
Yep.
Other people. I was showing Jim how
Greg was there?
How to flirt with the ladies.
Yes, you were giving me some lessons. Did you ever meet up with that girl anytime afterwards? Did you communicate? Anything happen at all? You're going to let us know anything or what?
He's going to cut this part out.
His ass got burned.
Let's hear it. Lay it out. Tell us everything.
Maybe I met up with her. Let's just say that.
Maybe you did. Well, she was a cute girl, so it seemed like it could have been worth it.
Yeah. You know, we hung out. We just shook hands and said good night. Right.
All right. Hey. You never know. Maybe someday something will happen.
Yeah. Maybe one day. Maybe one day I'll get lucky. Still waiting to kiss my first girl. So it's.
Oh, sure you are.
It's a bear market. We don't get girlfriends now.
Chinchilla, were you in Miami?
Yeah. I met up with Sean for a moment there. I forget what talk it was.
We met up in the, I think it was like after Sailor spoke or something in the main.
Yeah, that's what it was.
In the main.
I was there helping one of my friends. He's one of my friends from high school, Certain Orange. He was one of the artists down there in the gallery. So we went down there early and kind of set up all his works. And I mean, the gallery was so awesome. It was
really awesome. A lot
so
of great
to
work
see all those
year.
Pieces.
Agreed.
What I liked about Miami was, well, for me anyway, the impromptu nature of how the days flowed. I just acted like a leaf in the wind, and I just went in whatever direction, you know. And Sean, when I met up with you guys, we were at that music festival, and then it ended, and then we were all just like, all right, what are we going to do? And I'm like, I guess I'm with these guys. I don't know. Yeah. And you guys didn't kick me out of the group, so I just kept going. We end up at a taco place, and then, I mean, we get to a taco place. It's like six of us, and within an hour, there's 50 Bitcoiners at the same taco place, and none of us coordinated. No. I was like, what the hell? I know that guy. We're looking around the room and there's all these people we know. It's like, whoa.
Yeah,
but so that was really cool.
Showed up out of nowhere. That was cool.
Yeah. And then Susie Buds was across the room, and and D++. I remember seeing her, and Dustin was there. A whole bunch of other people were, you know, they all decided to go to the same taco place.
Yeah, everyone went there. Is that your
yeah. I don't even eat tacos, so. But I was just there for the fun of it. You know, that was just really cool. You know, we were there till late too. It was like 1 a.m. when I left, I think, something like that. Yeah. But that was the nature of every night in Miami. It's like something to do every day and night. So we just kept doing it. Pork Fest is like that. You know, essentially there's so many different little camps and places to go and people to hang out with that you could spend days walking around. You walk up to a camp, people are hanging out, talking, selling things. Maybe there's a talk going on. Someone's giving a speech. You sit down and, you know, 15 minutes later, you got a new best friend. It's like, oh, this person's cool. Well, let's get dinner later. You know, yeah. I don't know. It's just one of those types of things. You know, you meet friends you didn't know you had because you start talking to them and you realize you see the world exactly the same. What's cool about going to Pork Fest is that we have this, I think of it as an advantage because we know all this information about Bitcoin and a lot of people there don't. Unfortunately, and what I learned when I went last year is there's a lot of shitcoiners that tend to go. There's a lot of libertarians that are into cryptocurrency.
Yeah,
because the general, you know, subject of cryptocurrency, they think is cool and worthwhile. They just don't realize that everything is shit except for Bitcoin. And so we got to try and get them, you know, over the fence to the one side. So it's challenging at times. We had a bunch of people that were into like pirate coin or something that were there, and they kind of heckled us one day at one of our talks. And, you know, they kept getting up. They you know, we let people stand up in the line and ask questions. And these guys were a little bit relentless and trying to debate us about the merits of their shitcoin versus Bitcoin and, you know, whatever. But a lot of people are very receptive and open to it. And, you know, it's clearly, as we all know, it's going to be essential to anybody in the future, the way the world's going. So I think people's minds are opening up a little more. I think our responses this year are probably going to be a little more positive after another year of craziness that's gone by. So we shall see.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize how money ties into freedom.
Yeah.
They don't study what money is. And even exactly. Like freedom loving people sometimes don't even realize how important to like being financially free and having money that's not only separate from the government, but that can never be co-opted by your government, how important that is. And I think that's what, you know, most of these altcoiners don't realize is they have some pirate coin or whatever, Hex or Ethereum, whatever, that it's just like in the long run, it's basically a chance to become like some CBDC, a central bank digital currency for whatever country you're in. Or, you know, you got to watch out for like a central bank digital currency, which is just fiat on slavery, you know? So I think that's what a lot of people don't realize is how important Bitcoin is for freedom.
I think it was a big wake up call for the Canadians who were involved in the trucking protests that, you know, all of a sudden found all their accounts shut down by their government. Like it was instantly apparent to them that, oh, wait, my money isn't mine. It doesn't belong to me. It belongs to, you know, whoever issues it. And I think a lot of them helped, you know, transition their mindsets to, you know, realizing the need for Bitcoin in the world.
Yeah. And, you know, you think about what the United States just did to Russia by seizing $600 billion of assets in the international monetary system, wherever they keep it.
Yeah, a lot of the treasury bonds. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, so like even nation states are not immune to other nation states stealing their money, right? So like how good are we going to do against a nation state that wants to steal our money? Like people don't realize, but I think it's starting to happen because it's you know, it's happening in real life. Those people that would have said, oh, it can't happen to me, are starting to scratch their head and go, wait a minute, maybe it can happen to me. Even wealthy people, right? Really wealthy. You know what's going to be interesting? Robert Breedlove's I'm not a big fan of him, but he's a smart guy and I like some of his guests. So I just listened to him and Lawrence Lepard today. Mm-hmm. And it's a worthy discussion because they go off into the future and sort of guesstimate about how things could play out. And, you know, their timeline for the hyperinflation of the US dollar and hyper Bitcoinization is within a decade. And they use good amount of logic. I mean, I'm kind of on board with that as well. But the wealthiest people in society now who have it good because of their wealth are going to find that they're at the other end of the scale if they don't get Bitcoin. And it's like, I saw something that's 58 million millionaires. When it happens, watch them struggle to get one Bitcoin. They will fight each other to get that one Bitcoin because their wealth is just melting away. It's going to be a sad time for a lot of people that think they're okay. The novel, The Mandibles, that some of you may have heard about, was written in, I want to say, 2016. So it uses, there is a lot of references to things that are on the earth and in society right now. But then the storyline goes out to 2140 or something. And all the rich people are just destroyed because they didn't adopt the new money. The new money in that book is not Bitcoin, but the principle of making sure you stick with the best money in the world is really obvious to a Bitcoiner that reads that book. Really, really interesting. Very dystopian in some ways. But from a Bitcoiner's perspective, it's like, yeah, I could see this happening. I could definitely see. And we're in it right now, which is the scarier part.
Well, it's obvious that, like, in today's world, you have to adapt or die. You get left behind if you don't adapt with new technologies, right?
Absolutely.
Like, Warren Buffett, like, not adapting to using a phone. Like, it took him forever to use a cell phone, to use email. Like, all those stuff, those leave you behind somewhat. And then, like, over the history of the world, just naturally and biologically, subconsciously, people have gravitated towards the hardest money. And now we've have something that's verifiably scarce, that there's no more that can be made of, and that is the hardest money that can ever be created. And so I think when people start to understand that, just like what you're saying, people will be fighting, rich and wealthy people will be fighting to get Bitcoin. And it won't be easy to come by. That's why I in 2020, I was telling all my friends, if you can, like, get one, like,
yeah,
just get at least one. And then from there, like, do whatever you got to do. You don't believe in it, you believe in it, I don't care, but just try to get one. And then from then on, and then once you start getting it, then, like, actually buying Bitcoin, then it starts to make a lot more sense because you start paying attention to stuff.
Yeah. I got several. One of the craziest things.
One of the craziest things, right? Like, since 2017 or 2018, is like everything, like, the Bitcoiners have said that's gonna happen has actually happened, and actually happened faster than expected, right? Like, we didn't expect Michael Saylor to come on the scene when he did, and then we also had Nayib Bukele, of course, and these two guys, like, they're very similar, right? Because they're both in a position where they can just say, like, fuck you, I'm doing it. You know, they're not dependent on having to convince, like, the other side of the aisle or a board of directors or other set of shareholders. They were just like, look, I have the majority of the votes here, so I can just push this right through. So it's logical for them to go first, but at the same time, there's, like, so many more people that are getting this right now. So also on, like, governmental levels, there's more and more politicians getting this and seeing the opportunities, but they're still stuck, busy convincing and doing their due process and getting the other people. And I think it was Eric Weiss, you know, Eric Big Fund, who Orange Peeled Sailor. I think I listened to him on Princey's podcast. I'm not sure it was him, but anyway, they were talking about, like, Saudi Arabia, you know, like, what does it take for them to now see this and be like, you know what, we're just going to convert, like, $100 billion into Bitcoin, and we're not going to be dependent anymore on the United States or China, for that matter. You know, we're just going to choose our self-sovereignty. It's like this game theory of Bitcoin, where all these nation states are faced to look at this, and whoever is going to be, like, the first mover is going to, you know, there's just no other way that it's gonna, well,
it's gonna, yeah, totally,
I think it's gonna happen in the next couple of years. Yeah, that we're gonna see a acceleration of more and more states starting to play that musical chairs game, you know, and
yeah,
it's gonna melt some faces.
I agree. I think that gradually, then suddenly, in 10 years, you're gonna be able to look back and go, yeah, look at this gradually for 12 to 13 years, and then suddenly, boom, now, in the next 10 years, the exponential growth is going to look ridiculous, because really, really, really big players will try to get even small positions, which represent large positions in the Bitcoin ecosystem, because it's just not enough to go around. And yeah, I think it's going to be, what do they say, face melting? Isn't that what you just said? Yeah, people are going to freak out all over the world. What the hell is going on with that thing? And why didn't I get one like all my friends told me? I got a half a dozen people minimum that could easily afford one whole Bitcoin, maybe two, three or four or more. They got the money, they're doing well, and I can't get them over the line. I can't get them to convince them to go, just, you're storing wealth already. Just store some of it in here. You're not going to use it in the next few years anyway.
Yes.
Let it sit over here. It's a 150 to 200% return annually. Come on. When are you going to consider even a small percentage? You know, whatever. We all know the rhetoric that we try to use to convince people. And it's just, like I said, way earlier in this podcast, you know, it takes a minimum amount of education. Me or you or anybody else telling them they should get some is usually not enough. And especially, I learned this a long time ago, when you are outside of your lane, which I regularly am as a builder, like who wants to listen to me about their financial advice, right? Even though I might be telling them what they need to know, I'm not an expert from their perspective. So it takes somebody else that they trust to verify what I said. And then I've had plenty of people go, Jim, you're right, dude. My financial advisor is finally calling me about this. I'm like, well, your financial advisor is an idiot because he should have known a long time ago, but at least you're waking up. You know, like I try to mock him a little and at the same time encourage him. Like, it's, I don't know, you know, it's sad, but that's how it is.
I explain to people all the time, if I could figure this out, if I could stop and do the work that it took to figure out what was going on, and it was only because I bought some Bitcoin in 2015 and somebody in 2017 said, hey, have you heard about Bitcoin? And I went, oh my God, I bought some of that. So I go look and this really tiny amount that I bought is suddenly worth, you know, like $4,700. And it was like $100. Yeah. So at that point I had to decide, like, do I sell this? Do I keep this? What is this doing? Why is it doing it? And, you know, because believe me, anyone I told said, oh my God, sell it. And I'm like, I need to know more. And I was determined at that point to find out what the hell is this? So from 2017 till today, I mean, I can't debunk this and I've certainly tried, you know, it makes sense. If I can figure that out, I nobody else has an excuse. I'm sorry.
Well, you just have to be willing to go on the journey, right? Like, you have to be willing to go down that journey of understanding what money is. Because just like your case, Mel, I remember right as the bull run was starting in 2020, at the end of 2020, there was this one artist and she remembered that someone paid her 2 Bitcoin for art back in like 2013 or 2014. And she was like, oh, I found these 2 Bitcoin. And she's like, oh, it's worth like $27,000 now. And she's like, I need to sell it right now. And so instead of doing what you did, where you were willing to go on the journey and you actually decided to go down that rabbit hole and ask yourself, why is this so much more valuable now? Instead of just saying, oh, I can get more dollars for it. Like, you're okay, well, is it going to keep going up? And that's where she messed up, is because she could have had 2 Bitcoin, but instead she decided to take the fiat and she sold her Bitcoin. And
it just seems very short-sighted to me. And it's like, what opportunity has there been like this in our lifetimes? All of us, you know, we have an opportunity to be in on the ground floor with something that we don't get to do. And I haven't been able to disprove that even close to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the predominant perspective here is that it can't go up forever, even though we know it can. And because people have the lens of traditional investment vehicles to go by, this simply has to fit in a box that aligns with all of those same parameters. You got to sell at the high because may never go back to that, right? We all know that we haven't even come close to any high. There won't even be a high. It'll just keep going up in its purchasing power forever because of the limited supply. But people don't understand the economics of that because they haven't studied. They don't know that it's a protocol for money. I tell people all the time, when they say, you know, when I say, do you know even what Bitcoin is? And they're like, oh, some kind of internet money. I go, yeah, well, you're close. It's a protocol for money that operates on the internet. And if you really, really, really want to break it down, it's not even a protocol for money. It's a protocol for creating and monitoring digital files that can be moved around within the system using digital signatures. And it's done in such a way that all the computers on the network that maintain the system have have the exact same copy of where all these digital files are at any given time, which gets updated every 10 minutes. That's it. That's what we have. We have a system that moves digital files around where the files stay within the system, and everybody who helps maintain the system has the exact same copy every 10 minutes, and nobody's in charge of making that happen. The protocol makes it happen. So when you talk about it that way, it's like, well, why do I care about that thing? That's a weird invention. Well, what's cool about it is in the digital realm, you have the ability to create a digital file that nobody else can control. It's as if you created an uncopyable digital file, which has never been heard of before. Now, you can copy the file, but within the system, you can't do anything with it if you can't prove you own it. And the ownership is outside the system, essentially in control of the person on a hardware wallet with a private key that can control that digital file within the system. Now, extrapolate it one layer further and go, well, what can we do with these stupid digital files that are within a closed loop system? Well, we can give them value in the outside world. Like if you give me control over your digital file, I'll give you some apples or some fiat money. And all of a sudden, every digital file now had some value. As a matter of fact, one guy spent 10,000 digital files for two pizzas because he was hungry. Right. So at the time, those digital files had almost no value. And now millions of people around the world have recognized that within this system, those digital files can be very valuable, especially if enough people catch on. And this is what we've seen. 13 and a half years later, one of those digital files is worth, hold on, let me tell you, $31,363. I got the chart up on that screen right over there. Right. So, wow. How did a digital file in a closed loop system
become? How often do you look at that screen, Surfer Jim?
Oh, geez, it's never off. It's like it's always on. When I'm at my desk, that screen is right there in front of me all day long. I just always looking at it. I don't care. The price has nothing. It doesn't do anything to me. What's that?
So it's been kind of an exciting day for price. I mean, all fairness.
Yeah, it went up a bit earlier.
Yeah, it's like makes me happy. Like, all right.
Yeah, when it goes down, I get happy because I get more sats every time I buy some. When it goes up, I figure, all right, that's good too, because my purchasing power went up. So I'm happy either direction. I'm holding for the long run because I know number go up technology. Every digital file is going to be worth way more in the future than they're worth right now. So as the world wakes up, get some digital files on a closed loop system that people are now using as money. Right. We use all kinds of things as money. Now there's a closed loop digital system that regulates itself that nobody can alter or debase or anything. And the people that have adopted that system are valuing those digital files in such a way that it's being used as money. Here we are. Bitcoin is now money.
I think
another question.
Go ahead. No.
How in the world does anyone not look, at crypto land right now? And you look at all of these shit coins, okay, and let's say Bitcoin's on the top, we're still talking about an asset that's worth $31,000 per coin. I mean, is anyone not asking why?
Yes.
I mean, is it really I missed out? Because I personally think like the longer we kind of stay in this lull, the better it is for us to actually acquire more. But nobody is actually saying this is still a $31,000 per coin asset. Why does it hold that value?
I think
it just seems like it's common sense to me.
I was thinking about this today. So, and this is what I was going to say was, so even like to respond to Jim's thing too, right? Like Bitcoin's just money, right? If you want to like simplify it, it's just money. But the problem is, like to your question, Mel, is that most people, they're trying to define Bitcoin with words from the 20th century. And with technology from the 20th century. And so like I tried to explain it to someone today, like imagine trying to explain the internet to someone, but with vocabulary from the 1800s, or electricity to someone from vocabulary from the 1600s. Like you can't explain a new technology and a new money to someone trying to put it in this box of, oh no, an asset is what you hold on to and currency is what you spend and all this other garbage. It's like Bitcoin is this thing that breaks your box, it breaks your models. And so all like you have these Keynesian economists and people who have talked about money their whole lives, but they have these models that fit into fiat money, not what fits into a hard money standard of Bitcoin. And so they get lost because they go, well, Bitcoin, it's not a store of value because it's too volatile to be a store of value. It's not a medium exchange because not enough places accept it. It's not a unit of account because it's not, no one prices it in anything, you know? And it's almost like looking at a, Guy Swan said this one time, and he was like, it's almost like looking at a football team at the beginning of the season and saying, well, no team is going to be the Super Bowl champion because no team is the Super Bowl champion yet, right? It's like, you can predict, like, okay, what team is going to win? And I think that's what us as Bitcoiners, we just follow the logical order of, you know, okay, historically, people have gravitated towards hard money. We found a money that diminishes the role of government, that makes governments, makes it so governments have to be more honest with each other because it takes out the trust in money and the human error in money. And so I think this is what we're seeing is people are trying to define Bitcoin in words of a store of value, but from a Keynesian viewpoint or medium of exchange or what an asset is or what currency is. And they don't understand that Bitcoin's breaking all of those models that they have.
I bet you that every new adaptation of money that became accepted by any culture went through a similar transition period that Bitcoin is feeling now, meaning where a new money began replacing an old money, the exchange rate was probably very volatile between those people who were interested in moving from the old money to the new money, because the world has had lots of different forms of money. And one culture after another has given up old forms of money for new ones all over the world. It's happened many, many times. And the world currently uses fiat money in every country. So when those countries didn't have that, when they were on, you know, glass beads or seashells or feathers or something else, right? So the only problem is we don't have charts and we don't have historical records to look back at the volatility to explain to people, look, it always goes this way. When society adopts new money, it's always volatile. So yeah, okay, so you call it, it's not a good store of value because it's volatile. Well, it's volatile relative to exchanging it to something else. But within that closed loop system, it's very valuable because it can't be debased. So it's not really volatile. Once you get a percentage of the entire pie, that never changes. That's not at all volatile. But with the US dollar, your percentage of the pie is always changing, right? So it may seem like it's not volatile because your everyday prices don't change a huge amount, but you're getting screwed all day long owning dollars. We all know that. Unit of account is happening for some people, but again, it takes time. And medium of exchange is definitely happening for some people. The argument that not enough people accept it is being blown out of the water by companies producing debit and credit cards, where if you're on a Bitcoin standard, you can spend your Bitcoin through that card and the merchant gets dollars or something else and they don't even see it happen. So the rails are being built to allow for Bitcoin to be a medium of exchange for those that want it. There's already people using it as a unit of account. And a store of value for us, we already know. I mean, like, I stored a whole bunch of value in Bitcoin years ago, and it has way more purchasing power than it did then. So as far as I'm concerned, it stores value really well for me. But like, again, like anything else, you got to get some and then you got to wait. You got to hold it so that you can see that it was worth it. It did store my value. Through the ups and downs, it went up, which is what we know is going to happen with a scarce supply like Bitcoin has and an ever-increasing demand. It can only go in one direction, essentially.
So if it stores value, I got a question for Yellow. Win 100K, Yellow. Win 100K.
Should I really predict?
Yes.
Okay. Next May.
That's fair. Any time between now and then is reasonable. Mm-hmm. Could be much sooner.
He's saying next May. We got 11 months from now.
I'm going to say in the future.
We need to do like football squares or something, like, but with the price. That would be kind of fun.
Set up a pool, 100 boxes. Let's go, that Mel.
Be fun. All right, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. When do you think, Sean?
When do I think? I don't know. I would like to know when. Honestly, Marcus pays attention to the charts. And okay. The problem is I'm way too bullish. I'm always bullish.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
throw it out there, Sean. Let's hear it.
When do I honestly think we'll hit 100K?
Yeah. It's like only a 3X and some change.
Yeah, it's not that much, to be honest. I would say, and I'll give some reasoning behind. You got guys like Preston Pish and Dr. Jeff Ross that say that there's gonna be some more money printer go burr fourth quarter. So I'm gonna go 1 month earlier than, yeah, I'm gonna say April of 2023.
Okay.
I think you're gonna see.
That's like we are in Price is Right and you add like a dollar.
That $1.
Yeah, that $1.
Yeah.
Okay. Marcus?
Well, let's hear chinchilla.
I say 100K by end of day. one thing I wanted to say was, I think it's like really interesting. I find the hardest people to orange pill are the people who have done the most success in the fiat world. They seem very resistant to want to change their mindset of the wealth they've already made. And what's so interesting in like places like El Salvador, where they see that sort of money extortion from Western Union and companies like that, they're so hungry for that change. And I think, you know, all the kind of nations that are like that, you know, that seems to be where the change is going to come from. I see all these Warren Buffett types that are so enamored with themselves and, you know, they think they got it all figured out and, you know, they're the ones that are going to get spanked the hardest, thankfully.
Yeah, I think the wealth redistribution that's going to take place in the transition to a Bitcoin standard is going to be monumental, and it's going to wreck a lot of really wealthy people who waited too long. I hope I get to see it and laugh at some of the rich, arrogant assholes that are controlling things and destroying other people's lives. I want to see them be destroyed, some of these people. I really do.
I want to see what comes.
Like Nancy Pelosi and her husband, they deserve to be completely wrecked. They are so corrupt.
Here's what disgusting. I want to tell you. Here's when you know that Bitcoin has really made it. When you could give no shits whatsoever about Pelosi, about any of these morons, because we're all going to be so busy worrying, just being happy that we're going to actually feel sorry for them. How about that? That's what I think.
For a split second, maybe. But in the end, I don't feel sorry. For these parasites. I think we're just going to go, lives.
So sorry. I'm so sorry. Back to your hole now. We're going to just be done with them.
I think it's awesome seeing Elon press about the Epstein Island information that's being held by the DOJ. Like, I always wonder, like, why more people don't stand up on those things. And Elon's such a public figure that's like a huge slash at, you know, that control system. Well,
he's not just a public figure. He's also a trillionaire, which is the reason why list is not out. You know, that list is not public because of that. You know, there's too much control and too much power and money there, period. And so Elon Musk, how many people can call him out on that? He's one of them that can.
It's amazing.
So do it.
Yeah.
And to your point, Jim, if you look at that list from those 44, 42 central bankers, you know, from different countries that visited there. I mean, if you look at that country list, you know, those are not like your G20 European countries. I don't know if my audio is really bad, by the way, but.
There you
go. Sounds good.
All right, good. Yeah, so I can't even name a few off the top of my list, but there's a lot of African countries there, a lot of countries that's already been dollarized, you know, basically the countries that have been hit hardest or suffered the most under the likes of like the IMF or whatever. They're the ones that are most interested now. So that's definitely, and here in Amsterdam as well, to your point, Chinchilla, you know, like depending who I talk to, you know, but like the all yeah, all the professionals that work in for like these big corporates, they're just looking at you like, no, this Bitcoin thing is just not gonna happen, you know. Well, when I'm down in St. Martin or in Belize, everybody's really receptive to, yeah, we need to get under under the IMF or under from the Dutch system, actually. So yeah, and 100K, I have no idea. I thought for sure we would have seen it last year, right?
Yeah, me too.
I had no doubts whatsoever. So yeah, it humbles you, but I still have no doubts. I mean, it could happen this year for all I know. It could happen next year. Maybe a bit longer. Who knows?
Yeah. November 2022.
Okay, this year.
All right. Bullish.
Yeah.
All right. We'll hold you guys to it. Well, thanks.
And then make sure you tell everybody I'm wrong, because I'm sure I will be.
We're all wrong in 2021, so it's okay. The sooner it happens, the sooner Yellow can, he can have a happy close to his Don't Stop Believing spaces.
We need more banana bread.
Okay. I'll see what I can do.
Even though I really don't eat bread or carbohydrates anymore, banana bread is definitely one of my favorites if I'm going to eat some kind of bread.
Who doesn't like banana bread?
I don't know. I can't imagine why anybody would not like it.
I like it with chocolate chips in, but I don't eat that either. But with chocolate chips, it's the best bread there is. Banana bread with chocolate chips.
That's a fact. Right. All right. Well, thanks guys for coming on. I know this is kind of like an impromptu session, but this is our little close out we do. So just for everyone watching, a reminder that we have Knut Svanholm. He joins the Meme Factory podcast this Thursday at 7:30 PM live. Check in for that. And remember, what you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, don't just let it stay here. Share, like, and subscribe. If you learned something or found something informational or helpful. As for Bitcoiner's Guide, episode 16 from Mel, Bitcoin Chinchilla, Surfer Jim, Yellow, Plan, Marcus, and Big Sean. We're over and out. Peace.